afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for August 13th, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Labs. If you have a bath and body products line, why do all the work yourself? Essential Labs will manufacture your products under your label so you can have the time you need to market your products and expand your brand. Visit EssentialLabs.com today to find out more. Well, how many of us full-time workers have not considered tossing all caution to the wind, turning in a resignation letter, and launching a business of our own? I have, and as many of you know, I did that several years ago, and let me tell you, it sounds easier than it is. But today, more and more people are finding that traditional work, though it may pay the bills, is simply unfulfilling in so many other ways. But rather than chucking the job, many are finding that moonlighting, keeping the job, and starting the business on the side, so to speak, is the way to go. And on today's Indie Business Radio, that's what we're going to be talking about. Joining me to share her moonlighting story is Jill Iorato. Jill lives and works in New York's Southern Orange and New Jersey's Northern Sussex counties. While working a full-time job, Jill purchased a Fetch pet care franchise, and she's here to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thank you, Donna Maria. It's wonderful to be here.
So tell me, Jill, what is your background in terms of your job, your traditional job that you've had, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how you've eased into this moonlighting kind of sphere.
Okay, fantastic. Today, I actually work in the information technology industry, and I work for a multi-global corporation as a mid to upper-level manager. Again, it's an information technology. So my primary responsibility there is leading projects. I actually work in an Americas role, so I deal with people across the America, both North and South America regions, and I implement technology projects through people. So what that means is I would be responsible for handling PCs, networking, telecommunications, server implementations that support large to mid-scale business projects.
And this is a regular, traditional, full-time job, right? Is it 40 hours a week?
It's probably 40 to 60 hours a week, each week.
Well, that's a, now, how what kind of structure do you have? Do you have certain flexibilities built into your job that allow you to think about starting a business on the side?
Well, one thing that really helps me an awful lot is the area of technology, and also I have a great business partner, my husband, who's very, very supportive and helpful. But the thing that I do have flexibility with is I have the opportunity to work from home one day a week, mm-hmm. which significantly reduces the amount of commuting I'm required to do, so it enables me to remain effective in my full-time role and then to separate that full-time role from the work I need to do to build my business and to be successful in it.
Now, Jill, I saw from your bio that your weekly round-trip commute is over 15 hours.
It is. If I travel 5 days a week, it is. I go about between 70 and 110 miles to work each way. So it's very difficult and time-consuming. However, I even use my time in commuting to listen to self-help books, things that can help me to build my business. I use it an awful lot as well to think about what I'd like to do. I use the telephone a lot as I'm driving to communicate in a variety of different ways. Of course, always hands-free, but have to use time and technology to the best of my ability.
And how long have you had this particular job that you're describing?
I've been working for the same company in the same industry for 15 years. The reason I say the same company and industry is my role has changed several times. Mm-hmm. However, I've been an upper-level manager for about 5 years.
And when did you buy the franchise, Jill?
In December of 2006 was the marking of my independence.
Okay, now we've got a great timeline. You've had a career path for 15 years. For the past 5 years, kind of been doing pretty much the same kinds of things. And so what with this crazy commute and 60-hour work week, Jill, what was it about your life, your lifestyle, whatever was going on, that started you to think about having a business of your own?
You know, it's an interesting question because I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs, and I always saw how hard my parents worked. The reward was great, but they never seemed to have a lot of time for family, so I always thought for me, my path was in the corporate world. So I went to school, I got my bachelor's degree, I got my master's degree, and I really started to build my career in corporate America and working for a fantastic corporation. But what I started to see as my career developed and as time turned was that there are many, many shifts in the corporate world today. So particularly in IT, today we're looking at a lot of opportunities for outsourcing. We are offshoring a lot of our development work and significant reorganizations within the corporate world, which leads an individual to have a difficult time feeling that there's any sense of security in their role. And also, it's oftentimes difficult to see how you might develop your role further and to a higher level within the organizational walls. So as I started to really ponder where I was going in corporate America, I started to think about what would give me more flexibility and give me something that I could really work in and be passionate about. Mm-hmm. So also I had to think, though, about when I started to build my business, I wanted to make sure it wasn't something that would control me and give me less flexibility. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at my life, I said my true passion is in pet care. And I certainly have a history of that. My parents had dog and cat kennels growing up. And I knew that it's a huge market area. There's about $40 billion industry today.
Right, and growing, huh?
And growing. And a lot of empty nesters, myself included, we're spending a lot of money on our pets. Mm-hmm. And we want to have alternative solutions for pets to have an opportunity to go, instead of going to a kennel where they're put in a cage, instead they can go to a sitter's home and integrate with their family. Mm-hmm. So it was something that was attractive to me as an individual and a pet owner. And in talking to many different people, I started to realize there really is a true demand for this. So as I looked at, you know, how can I start a business that would be both lucrative, give me flexibility, and a model that was something that I really could grow into a large corporation, I found Fetch Pet Care, which is a franchise. And it's tremendously easy to get your business started because it is turnkey. Mm-hmm. And so you don't need to have, they've already gone through all the pain points and what it takes to be successful in this industry.
And is that what you mean by turnkey? It's kind of there's a format, there's a progress plan already there in place.
Right, absolutely. They give you the software. They give you the insurance to be bonded and insured. They give you marketing tools, so you leverage the corporate size through, you buy individually, but you leverage the size of Fetch Pet Care nationwide. So you get, clearly you get benefits on everything that you would purchase.
You mentioned, Jill, that you're an empty nester. Does that mean you have grown kids?
I do. I have a 21-year-old son who's in his fourth year of college. He goes to Cooper Union in Manhattan. He's an art student.
And so, Jill, tell me, how do you think that it was easier to contemplate making this move since your child was grown than it would be if he was younger?
It's an important point because with a full-time career and a small child, it would be more difficult for me mm-hmm. to devote the time that's necessary to build the business. For me, clearly the timing was right mm-hmm. and the opportunity was ideal. So it was at the right time, at the right place for me in my life.
And you described a bit ago sort of the corporate dynamic and how it's changing from the way it was years ago. It's much more fluid and jobs are being transferred overseas and things like that. Tell me, Jill, what kinds of things are you seeing your colleagues talking about, the other middle managers in your company? Are they sort of a similar mindset to you that they kind of need to do something a little bit differently?
It's really amazing. One wouldn't think so when you walk around in the corporate environment, see people doing their jobs and interacting and doing a tremendous, creating a tremendous effort with it. But when you start talking to people, as soon as I mentioned, you know, I started my own business, I bought my own pet care franchise, people want to know more about it, but shockingly, a lot of them are doing the same thing themselves, from becoming consultants, should they decide to leave their corporate career, to developing, buying a franchise that delivers meal solutions to working adults. They are absolutely out there changing the footprint that they would normally have on the corporate world today.
And what is your perception or experience about how management, I know you're in management, but upper level management and directors and things at that level, how are they seeing this? Do they know about it? Are they looking at it going, gee, how are we going to make everybody happier?
I don't know that they are directly aware of it or necessarily addressing it through, this is a problem, we need to look at this more closely. Mm. What they are doing, though, clearly, whether it's through leaving people due to starting their own businesses or leaving for other opportunities in the marketplace, mm-hmm. they are looking at ways to improve the way that we, build our business, the way that we let people work from home, have alternative working arrangements, and making this a better place for people to work and spend their time. It's important with the trends today that the new working people who are coming out of college, their career at an organization is typically 1 to 2 years. Mm-hmm. They are not looking for a place where they're going to hang their hat and retire. They're looking for stepping stones to bigger and better things. So it's something that the corporate world has to compete with.
And if people feel sort of more and more like they really are independent agents and they bring so much to the table, and that employers now have to really compete in on a much grander scale than they ever did before to keep all this educational talent, this work experience talent, and this passion that people have within themselves, and employers, that they have to figure out new ways to bring that out of people.
They absolutely do. They have to look for more and more ways to make their corporation attractive to both mid-career hires as well as new hires, because if you don't have new talent coming into the marketplace, you can stagnate in your product development and your ability to be successful. And that wouldn't really change even for me in my business. But the other thing is you have to be careful to be able to keep people so that you retain your industry knowledge, because it's very difficult to replace employees today, and it's very difficult. You just can't. It's not as difficult. You cannot replace years and years of experience with a corporation. So it's something that throughout the industry that large corporations and small really have to be in tune with and address proactively.
Well, your employer sounds like pretty lucky to keep you on their team, even though you're doing a little of your own entrepreneurial pursuits on the side. So tell us, Jill, a little bit about how that started. What you talked a little bit about sort of the impetus for it, but what was the first thing you did after you stumbled upon Fetch based on your research? Probably you didn't stumble upon it. You researched and you found it. Then what did you do? Did you make a plan? Did you get together the money? What sorts of things did you do before you actually decided to buy into the franchise?
Well, some of the things I did was I started asking people, looking into what are others in the industry, or what would my competitors be doing mm-hmm. right now, so I could understand what was the model that I would have to compete with. I recognized that out there in the pet care industry, the large majority of companies were mom and pops providing service to a very limited space. I realized that that wasn't something that could get me really where I could set my own destiny. It was something that I would have to manage on a day-to-day basis. So I wanted to research, how can I do something in an industry that I'm passionate about that I could build very quickly and would not own me 24 hours a day.
Right, so because you knew you wanted to keep your job, at least for some period of time. That wasn't an issue going into this, right?
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I never thought I was just going to leave and go and start my own business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was important to me that it would be something I could spend time when I was able to and not spend time when I wasn't able to.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, just from having the family background, seeing my parents, because pets are 24 hours a day. If a pet is sick, it has to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was extremely important to me to make sure I had dedicated and reliable pet care providers who could provide the service to the pets while I was just doing the business, doing the marketing, payroll, billing, things of that nature. So I did a lot of research about what was out there, and frankly, Fetch was the only franchise that I found, and Paul Mann, our CEO, is absolutely tremendous. He is investing in the business. He does an awful lot of PR. So we are able to leverage anything that the organization does throughout the nation, whether it's in California or all the way out on the East Coast in New York. I also looked for something where they had a significant track record,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to understand what the costs would be. They helped me also to do my demographics, so they could help me to select the territory that I would be covering. So all of the things that I, as a new business owner, did not understand or know about, They already had that for me.
And so, once you actually invest in the franchise, did they do a lot of this work with you and this research with you before that so you would kind of know what you were getting into?
Absolutely. When I expressed an interest in the franchise, they did a presentation, had a lot of discussions with me, mm-hmm. left the phone open for me to ask any questions I had, and they helped me once I decided I definitely wanted to do this. They had described their process prior to it, but once I decided I really wanted to do this, they helped me to determine what the territory would be. They guided me in what would be what they felt would be successful, what they felt wouldn't be successful, and helped us to choose something that would be workable for us and would get us the success that we wanted, that we were so looking for.
So how long between your initial contact and your actually paying for the franchise, how many months was that?
I'm actually embarrassed to say I've been looking at this for about 2.5 years, and if I had started back then, I'd be a lot further along. But once I actually decided to make the commitment, it was really in October. Mm-hmm. It moved along extremely quickly from that point on, where we were able to get the franchise done, go out, get trained. We went for a 2-day training with Fetch Pet Care out in California. We went on a dog walk with one of their sitters, which was an awful lot of fun. And then they helped us to understand, you know, they gave us a plan on what you should be doing on, you know, T-minus 4 weeks, T-minus 3 weeks, and built you right up to, you know, getting your direct deposit set up for your sitters, getting your website set up, when you should hire your first sitter, when you should start doing your marketing. So they helped us through all of that so that up until the point of actual launch, it was extremely easy and straightforward for us.
And how did you find sitters? I mean, you're not doing any of the actual sitting yourself. So how did you find people that were willing to do that, that you could rely on?
It's a great question. And by the way, we are hiring. So please look us up on our website at fetchpaircare.com.
Okay. We'll make sure we give all that information before we go.
Thank you. We actually do an awful lot on Craigslist. We've had some newspaper articles, which has generated a lot of interest in our company. Mm-hmm. We, just through direct wearing clothing, having our magnets on our cars and decals on our cars, to talking to vet's offices, vet techs, getting leads through our existing sitters, reaching out to friends that we know are pet lovers and can trust, going to animal shelters where folks volunteer their time because they just love pets. So a whole variety of avenues. There isn't one single that we've just utilized. I will have to say, though, that Craigslist and sitter referrals have been the most successful for us to date.
And it sounds like it's been grassroots. I mean, did you pay any advertising to get any of these people?
We really did not. I shouldn't say that. We did do one paid advertising campaign, and it was not as successful as the rest of the things that we are doing today. Mm-hmm. We do pay for Google advertising, so that's also a huge generator of interest for us, from sitters to potential clients.
Because mm-hmm. that's targeted to your geographical area, right?
Yes, it is. So if you put in pet care, we should come up first in the areas that we service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that one has been tremendous for us.
So what would you say to some other middle managers, Jill, who are out there, they have a job, it's a good job, they like the job, but, you know, there's some things that they're not that, you know, happy with in terms of the flexibility and, you know, kind of looking at the way the job market and careers in corporate America are looking today. What would you say to them if they're thinking about doing something like this?
Well, I would tell them that they really should make sure they do research so that if they decide to take a step into starting their own career, make sure it's something that they're passionate about, because there truly will be days when you're spending a lot of hours building your business, and so you better love it. Mm-hmm. The other thing is make sure you have a strong support system, a strong partner, business partner, spouse, friend, someone you can trust to run your business and someone that you can rely on when you're not able to do the things that need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's all about relationship building. So as you bring, for me, it's bringing employees and sitters on that I trust, and I know if I need them, I can call them and ask them to do something that they may not, you know, normally do. I certainly wouldn't take advantage of them, but having someone you trust who you can send on new sitting jobs with new sitters or what have you is really, really important. And being organized, making sure you have the tools necessary once you've done all the research and know what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
make sure you get every bit of tool and automation that you can, because it simplifies your life significantly. And make sure that you're organized, because with so many balls in the air and so many things that you're doing, it's very difficult to make sure that you've got everything done that needs to be done. So having that organization, whatever tools you need, is critical to your success.
Now, Jill, your boss knows about your business.
He does know.
Now, was that an issue? Did you have to think about that for a while? And the reason that it comes to mind is because so many people, you know, I talk to, I've had people say they couldn't be a guest on the show because their boss doesn't know about their business, and they don't want it publicized. And since my show is worldwide and has bazillions of listeners around the universe, they didn't want anybody to know about it. And so tell us how you made that decision.
Well, because for me, I don't let it interfere with my career.
Was it ever an issue whether to even mention it? I mean, obviously you don't have to mention it. If it's not interfering, you don't have to let anybody know.
You know, I was nervous about it up front because I didn't want my boss to think that I was looking for a way to leave corporate America and for that to interfere with my ability to be successful in my career.
Okay.
Because I love my job. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's important to know. So, yes, I was nervous about it, and honestly, it's, my boss knows about it, but it's not something that I talk about on a regular basis as from a business perspective. It's more along the lines of, here's what we're doing, in more of a general statement than as this is my business and here's my plan, and I don't talk about it in that sense necessarily. It's more just, you know, here's a service that my husband and I are offering.
Well, and these days, too, it's like, maybe that boss has something on the side going on, too. Are some of your colleagues your customers now?
Yes, they are, actually.
Yeah.
Some of them are, because, you know, we all have pets, and Many people commute long hours like I do. So that's, if I have people who I've not shared that with, there are customers that I would not have had otherwise. So it's very important. We actually did have a number of years ago, and this is not what you would want to happen, but we had someone who was moonlighting, but it was impacting that individual's career, and they were literally like almost doing half-time business and half-time career. So I know that that's something that I had to be very, very cognizant about, that I was continuing to dedicate as much time and effort as I would normally do to my career.
Yeah, and you really do have to be aware of that. Well, you know, you've shed some really great insights into what's going on in the corporate arena today. And to help sort of facilitate this discussion and dovetail with what you're talking about, we've got an expert on the topic of the workplace. His name is John McKee. He's the author of 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot. He is an expert and a visionary behind both BusinessSuccessCoach.net and BusinessWomanWeb.com, two online destinations for professionals who are interested in maximizing their success in business and in the workplace. And John is also the author of Career Wisdom, a book which will be out next week, I believe. And he's here to talk a little bit about the workplace, what's going on, and how we can, you know, manage ourselves if we are dividing our time between a traditional career and a business of our own. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Donna. Nice to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I know you've been listening to Jill and I talk a little bit about what's going on in the workplace, and I know you work with entry-level managers to senior-level executives and also with entrepreneurs. What are some of the things, John, that you're noticing in the corporate world that's kind of changing, shaking things up a little bit?
Well, there's an increasing concern about downsizing, and as Jill noted in her comments, offshoring, particularly in categories of business like IT, where she's from. But it's also impacting everybody now. People are, if they haven't been downsized or right-sized, they know people who have, and so they're starting to realize they've got to take life in their own hands.
Hmm. And when you say that, do you work with people to help them do that? I mean, that's a real scary proposition. I know, Jill was raised in a family of entrepreneurs, so maybe not for someone with her background, but I know for other people, me included, you know, my parents had traditional jobs, and they had them for 20, 25 years and had the retirement parties and the whole nine yards. And so doing something different was a little bit scary. What sorts of tips and things do you offer to help your clients kind of work through these kinds of things?
The first thing is to realize that no business is safe from significant change.
Mm-hmm.
many people went to corporate life because they expected the kind of 25-year anniversary party that you just described.
Right.
And they now know that corporations don't have hearts. Corporations aren't here for your long-term satisfaction. So there is a greater awareness, even with folks who had never contemplated the fact that they could be put out of work. And I'm talking about people like accountants and lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is being affected by either what's going on in Asia, because people can do it cheaper and often better, or also automation. You know, if you're an accountant who perhaps made a great living with the bulk of your business coming at tax time,
right?
People like TurboTax kick the crap out of your business.
Right.
And so everybody's recognizing this. Don't need to give a lot of tips about be aware of it, because they're coming to me with that concern.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things are people doing? Let's say, obviously, Jill, she's, you know, made a decision of how she's going to handle it. Now she's got the best of both worlds. Obviously, some people will, you know, chuck it all and start their own business. But, John, who is staying? Who is staying in a traditional job for any period of time?
People who have a lot of tenure and believe that their company is going to look after them still exist.
Mm-hmm.
People in senior roles usually have what's called golden handcuffs. So even if they're inclined to recognize that they should get the heck out of Dodge, so to speak, they're stuck because they've got, payment packages which reinforce them hanging around until the company decides it's time to go. So there are those folks. People who are joining newer industries, industries that are in biotech or still in some forms of the IT sectors,
mm-hmm.
Any startups where they feel that they're part of a new team and
right.
growing with it,
right.
those things all work. The folks, though, I think Jill made a very good comment, and I loved her term and the way she used the word passion.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that at some stage, and younger now than it used to be, because this whole generation of people termed millennials and even the Gen Xers have grown up knowing that they have options and that they don't have to accept the status quo. And I think people want to pursue their passion more than ever in the past. Older people don't know how to do it, and they think it's a bit of a fairy tale, so you have to help them.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that technology has really allowed people to be able to see the possibility of pursuing their passion and being able to eat at the same time? Because for so many people, and I know, Jill, it may not be in your case, but certainly you probably know some other people who, you know, have tried to step out there, and, you know, passion is great, but, you know, you got to pay the mortgage.
Yes, very big deal. First you've got to identify what your passion is, and then you've got to have a plan. And, that's where someone like a coach comes in, because we can help people try to ground their passion in reality so that they're not going off and investing their IRA into something that flakes out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the having a plan part of it is critical. If you're investing in a franchise, and I know Paul Mann's group, he's pretty well regarded in the industry. If you're investing in a franchise where the people work closely with you and they're continually investing in their business, I mean, it seems to be a pretty safe bet that you're going to experience at least the kind of success that others before you did.
Right.
But if you're starting your own business just because you always, you know, like something, you better have a fairly good plan. And a lot of corporate America people don't, a lot of lawyers don't, a lot of doctors don't.
Is that what you did? I know you had, or maybe still have, a traditional job, and you now have a career as a success coach. How did you make that transition?
Well, I do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
For me, making it was pretty easy. I've been involved in, I started getting involved in coaching in 1988. It wasn't even called that back then. and I was a senior executive with a large corporation, was asked to help some of my peers deal with a difficult economy and take a look at different approaches of doing business. Subsequently, the company that I worked with sent me on some courses. At that time, Harvard, Michael Porter was probably the only guy who was really talking too much about it. And so as I went through the corporate ranks over the years, I continued taking programs and upgrading my education on coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, the company that I helped found, called DirecTV, was sold, and at that time, those of us who were involved in the startup had the opportunity financially to go and pursue our own passions.
Right, right. That's a nice way to be.
Yes,
that's
a good
benefit to have. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's sort of the people in the companies that you're talking about, the startups that are doing really well, maybe being bought for a lot of money, ultimately have that kind of flexibility as well. But for the rest of us, we really have to have what you described, a plan. And does that basically mean either going the franchise route or some sort of sales consultant route where you actually have, as Jill described, the turnkey set up for you, or actually sitting down? I mean, do you have to write out a plan? I know if you want to get financing, you obviously have to have something substantial on paper to show. But what kind of plan do you mean for today's new kind of entrepreneur?
Well, a business plan that any bank or other lender would be prepared to invest in has some fundamental elements to it. Bill mentioned some of them, but basically, you know, what's the business that you think you want to be in? What's the size of the marketplace? Why do you think that you're capable of succeeding in that business? These are questions that one has to ask herself before she even jumps into the business, because if you can't answer it yourself, then you're sure not going to get anybody else to kind of invest some money or time and effort to join you.
Right.
So, you know, what is the business? How are you going to do it? What are the costs of starting the business? As you noted, this virtual economy sort of makes it easier for us to work telephonically or on the Internet, but there are still things that require bricks and mortar or investment of capital.
Right.
So you have to take a hard look at that, and if you don't know how to do it, there are lots of websites which will tell you how to write a business plan. Or you can invest, you know, in a local coach or a mentor, somebody who can look you in the eye and say, do you really believe in this and why?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, after you've got your plan that you think has legs, so to speak, that it could work, then you've got to ask yourself honestly, you know, how fast can I expect to start generating income from this? And I think this is where the whole concept of moonlighting plays so well, because in most cases one can continue working and can get their business off the ground and nurse it and bring it along until, it's starting to generate some income and then some revenues that one can use. But stepping out of corporate life or however you're generating your income today, and then just jumping in with both feet and managing by crossed fingers, so to speak, is not a good plan.
I like that, management by crossed fingers, yes. Well, you know, since you have got so much experience working with management in the traditional workplace, what are some of the mistakes that someone can make besides just the crossed finger approach? What are the mistakes that someone can make when they are moonlighting and they're getting this kind of thing off the ground? I mean, it makes me think of like don't ask, don't tell. Do you let anybody know? Do you not? And Jill struggled with that a little bit, and ultimately, as you know, she's out in the open. But many people don't have that ability, or they feel as though they can't tell their boss. What sorts of suggestions can you make for them to stay in that workplace and enjoy and get the fulfillment and the pay and whatever security they have while they're doing this on the side?
Right. I think the first thing is to be honest with yourself. The idea of a full-time job is that you're giving a given number of hours for what somebody at some stage perceived was a fair rate of pay for it. And if you're cheating the company, if you're doing things at the company's expense, halfway through the day, taking an hour or two to do your own business, that's just not fair, and at some stage you're going to get busted for it, or else it's going to come back and bite you.
Right.
On the other side, however, there are a lot of folks who work 60 hours a week. They're giving the company far more than was originally agreed on in the sign-up, and I think you have to kind of be able to look into your heart and say, what's fair here? If you've got a supervisor or an organization that you can discuss the fact that you want to moonlight, that you intend to moonlight, and you can get an agreement on how to do it, what hours are going to be affected, is my performance going to change, etc. That's always the best way to do it. Honesty truly is the best policy. Unfortunately, there are a lot of crappy bosses, and they're just going to say no. And if that's going to be the case, then you're going to have to figure out how you can do it without impacting your boss and without getting, harming the company or harming yourself by getting busted.
Yeah, and it sounds like, if a boss literally says no, you can't do this in your spare time, maybe even some professional advice might be might be necessary. An employment lawyer or something might have something to say about that.
Yeah, I think the laws on that are pretty clear now. In most cases, unless someone's got a very stringent contract herself with the company that says, thou shalt not compete, in most cases they cannot stop you from doing it on your own time. The concern is always, though, is it really your own time? Or are you doing stuff, you know, using our, you know, web time when you're here and we're paying you for, you know, a fair day's work?
Right. What if you take lunch at your desk and close your door and do your business for an hour? That's kind of like what you mean by a little bit of a potentially gray area.
Yeah, and one should always remember, you know, that computer, even, you know, and everything that goes in and out of it is owned by the company.
Yeah, so they can see it and seize it and take all the data and use it against you.
Yeah, and so you can say, I really wasn't doing anything, and this comes up all the time with the HR folks.
Well, Jill, it sounds like you never had to be concerned about any of that, and maybe one of the reasons, would you say, is because you were so upfront from the very beginning.
I think it's that, but I also think it's because I knew because I also have someone else who's doing the business with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it very important because all of the things that have to transpire during the day, my husband takes care of that. So he is my business partner. He's out there doing the marketing, doing the interviewing, doing the hiring. I'm helping him with the strategy and the billing and the payroll, you know, in the evenings and on the weekends. So I am able to take my business, put it on the side while I'm at work and do my job while I'm at work. And, you know, I also bring work home from my regular job, too. So sometimes they do overlap there. But for me, it was because I knew that my intent was not to necessarily replace my job. So it was, in fact, building a business that I could have for the future for whatever ends up happening. It's, you know, similar to what John was saying with, we don't know when a corporation is going to reorganize, move operations to an area that we're not able to support or to relocate with, or just any variety of things can happen. So for me, that made it easier because I had someone else I could rely on and I knew I would be able to separate the two.
Now, Jill, is your husband moonlighting as well?
He is not. He does have his own business. He does things very similar to what John does, but he's able to set his own schedule. He's an author of a couple of books. He does motivational speaking and also coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's got that flexibility, he's able to take the time, set it aside, and actually dedicate it to this portion of the business and also continue with the other things that he's working on.
And I would imagine, Jill, and correct me if you didn't get this impression, maybe the topic didn't come up, but the fact that your business partner is your spouse seems to me to make it a little more palatable for any manager who might otherwise be a little skittish about the thought of having an employee start a business. It's like, you know, this is kind of a family thing. So this isn't you doing it all by yourself.
I think it does. I think that it gives them the understanding that the large majority of the operational aspects are being done by someone else besides myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this business is my passion. This is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fortunate enough to have a husband who's supportive of it and helping me to get this off the ground. Something else to note about this model is that you can actually put a lot of the operational activities. You can have dispatchers and you can have lead sitters. There's an awful lot of things that a normal business owner would have to do on a daily basis that you can actually have others help you to do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another component of it that brings the understanding of how much time is this really requiring me to dedicate, which probably is only about, for me personally, about 10 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a significant amount of time, and I'm able to get that in the evenings and weekends.
Now, is it profitable yet?
It is profitable.
Well, that's a good sign.
Yes. Relatively low startup expenses, but I will say that my husband and I made the decision to invest an awful lot in advertising and marketing. So for us, it's tremendous that it's profitable already because the model actually does not call for us to be marketing the business the way that we are yet.
So you, in addition to your franchise fee, you spend a whole lot more money doing other things as well.
That's correct.
Okay.
So each month, I mean, we have a PR agent, and we've done some marketing within our local areas.
Mm-hmm.
through newspapers and mailers and a whole variety of things that we're doing to build our business, because we are not in the phone book. So any customer we generate is through relationships and us getting out there in front of the customer base to attract them to us.
John, when you're out there in the marketplace, at the corporations doing your speaking, what are the employees saying about this kind of, you know, these kinds of options that we're faced with? Seems like an unprecedented number of options, particularly with technology. And also, quite frankly, with people like you out there, John, telling people, you know, pumping people up and letting them know that the world is their oyster, no matter what their age is, they can always look forward to something new. What kinds of things are people saying about being in a traditional environment as opposed to doing something that they could really feel passionate about?
Well, I love the question. It really differs by age, generation, I think. When I'm working with people kind of post 40 years old, they have perhaps had children or nieces or nephews or something, and they've said, you know, gosh, Sally, it's really important that you get out there and do what you love. And then they'll come to me after, you know, a discussion and say, I don't know what I love.
Right.
And so I think I want to do something different, and I think I'm, you know, in danger of getting laid off or something like that, but how do I figure that out?
Right.
And there are books and courses that one can take to do that. They can, you know, always go with folks like me to help them figure that out. But that's got to be your first starting point. This is, I'm absolutely convinced after this many years that when we get involved with something that we really like, what we really love doing, the success does follow. Now, it's better if you got a business plan that you can manage and kind of monitor if you're making the right kind of progress.
Right.
To the other side of the question, though, the younger people are just so full of, you know, enthusiasm about getting out and starting their own business. And
right. There
is a bit of an economic cycle that comes from this. When you see people making a great deal of money in a certain industry, you start thinking that, heck, I should be doing that too. The young people are used to using outside advisors. In most cases, people in their 20s and 30s grew up having soccer coaches or going to, you know, an after-school program where they taught them how to get their math marks up and stuff like that. So they're very comfortable working with outside business partners, so to speak, to help them get firm.
So when you talk with some of the people, as you described earlier, the 40s and over, do they talk about how they really would like to be able to pursue it, but they're not just terrified that they don't know what it is they want to do, but they've got these kids and they've got college and they've got all this other stuff to be concerned about?
Absolutely. And, you know, that becomes the opposite of a golden handcuff, doesn't it? You are fearful at such a young age, in your 40s, for example, that you'll never be able to do anything because you have all these financial obligations, and gosh, you know, what if I, you know, let my kids down and I can't help them go to college or something like that? This is, it's a insidious disease, Donna. It takes over, and it causes you to believe, I have no option but to do this job which I dislike in a company which I'm unhappy with and which ultimately is going to divorce me and treat me poorly. And so there are a lot of morose people walking around, and you have to help them understand that they can take control of it. Once again, like, you know, this whole subject of moonlighting, it allows you to put your not just your toe in your water, but, I mean, you know, right up to your ankle in the water
to
see if you can actually generate income other ways.
Right, because you do have weekends and you do have evenings and you do have technology and you do have people that can help you.
You're absolutely right.
So, you know, it's interesting, Jill, you mentioned a little bit earlier that your husband is your business partner. Okay, that's a whole nother show. I don't realize that, but I do have to ask you, Jill, what is it like working with your spouse? You've been married for some time, so how many changes did this bring about in your relationship, or did it bring any at all?
It absolutely has. We've been married for more than 20 years. So, you know, it's interesting. It's a lot of fun, and it was so exciting when we decided we were going to do this, to buy a business that we could build together. And it's a great experience because we both are driving towards the same goals. However, I will say that there are challenges, too, and I know he can tell you this. You know, your expectations tend to be greater for a family member. So if something doesn't get done or something doesn't go exactly perfectly, you tend to be harder on that individual if they're because they're a family member.
Right. What about that trip to Tahiti? If you don't get this done, we can't go.
Right. Exactly. So.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, thankfully, he's very patient with me because I know I can be quite demanding and have very high expectations and.
Right.
And so when you're passionate about that, about things, that tends to happen. But
right.
I think overall it's been a very positive experience because we're both moving in the same direction.
Now, Jill, do you make yourself available to people who are kind of interested in maybe not a pet franchise, maybe so, but just generally kind of getting out there and doing a little moonlighting on their own? Have you talked with other people about it and given them some encouragement and advice?
I have, absolutely. There have been people who've asked me what my experiences are, what was important to me, how did I decide to go with a franchise versus doing this on my own,
mm-hmm.
how did I choose what industry I wanted to go into. So you know, some of the things I tell them that were important to me was, the first thing was, you know, don't let someone steal your dream. Because you don't want to go through life and then say, I wish I should have done so-and-so at some
right.
point.
Right.
So, you know, take the chance and find a way that you can do it. But the other important thing that I tell them is it's important to be realistic about what you can and can't do, similar to what John said, is, you know, how much time do you really have to dedicate to this so it won't impact your job if you want to do it as a moonlighting business? And how committed are you to it? Because the last thing you want to do is invest money, invest a little bit of time, and find it's not really what you want to do or you're not committed to it, so you waste your money, you waste your time, and maybe frustrate others in the process.
Right.
And then understanding how much you can invest, because some people don't really think about it. They say, oh, well, the franchise fees are so much, without really thinking forward to, well, how long is it going to take me to become profitable, and how much money am I going to have to invest for this to be a successful business,
right.
or something that will be lucrative enough where it's even worth the time I'm spending on it. So,
right.
you know, people, I think it's important for them to understand if their desire is truly real. If it's not so, are they kind of thinking about it? But if they really are seriously thinking about it, I say, you know, just really take the steps to do it, because you don't want to end up in that situation or that rut 10, 15,
right.
20 years from now.
Right.
So.
And Jill, how can we get in touch with you to learn more about your business there?
You can send an email to sorange, for South Orange, at fetchpetcare.com. So SORANGE at fetchpetcare.com.
And Fetch Pet Care, we could go there and do a location search and find you as well?
Absolutely. You could go to fetchpetcare.com and search in New York, and you'll find us in the Port Jervis area.
Great.
You can't look up by franchise name, so it'll be important
okay.
to know the town that you'll be looking for.
Okay, good. And John, how about you? How can we get in touch with you and get your book?
We've got a couple of websites, and I'll give you the easiest one to remember. That's John M. as in Michael McKee,
mm-hmm.
.com, www.johnmckee.com. The book which you referenced, the second one, Career Wisdom, actually comes will be available in stores on September 15th. The first one, 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot, is available at the website I just gave, Donna, or also businesswomanweb.com.
Okay, and you do speaking. Are you going to be, where are you going to be next so we could sign up and come listen to you?
For the next couple of months, I'm going to be out talking about my book. I won't be doing any speaking engagements aside from perhaps seeing me on local or national television or something. So
okay.
thank you for that. But
we'll be looking for you.
All right.
We'll definitely be looking for you. I'm real excited to have Jill Iorato and John McKee join me today. I hope you'll visit their websites and take a look at John's books, several out now and one coming out next month about career advice and helping women to stay on track and make the most of their careers and their lives. And Jill, we thank you for joining us and sharing your story about how you are doing that. Indie Business Radio is a production of Indie Business Media. Join the conversation at indiebusinessblog.com. Download podcasts or enjoy streaming audio of all of my radio shows at indiebusinessradio.com. I'll be on vacation next week, but join me on August 27th when Indie Business family Bill and Debbie Brink will join me to share how they successfully combine business and love. They are married and a blended family from their corporate home base in Ohio. And after Labor Day, I'm back on a regular business schedule here at Indie Business Radio. Until then, this is Donna Maria saying enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.